Hi, this is Dr. David Stevens, your host of Christian Doctors Digest. Thanks for being with us and taking time out of your busy schedule to really sharpen your faith. You know, growing in our faith is something we all need to do. I was thinking about the other day, and you know, we talk about prayer, and we talk about Bible study, and church attendance, and fellowship, and scripture memorization, and all those are really good things, but oftentimes the thing that I think helps me grow the quickest is when I'm out on a limb of faith, when I'm serving God and just having to be so dependent on Him. I remember a few years ago, I took a GHO team down to Lima, Peru. We were working with Prison Fellowship. We went into a maximum security prison with machine gun carrying guards, and we were working with Shining Path guerrillas that were been incarcerated. You know, for some strange reason, everybody got really closer to the Lord that week. You know, that's true for us. In fact, people ask me, what do you miss most about being a missionary overseas? And I often respond, it's exercising my faith. I just had to do it every day there because we were so dependent on Christ for medications we didn't have, for dealing with a disease or doing a surgery that we'd never seen before. You just lived in God's presence. That type of faith exercise is so good for us. And on this issue of Christian Doctors Digest, that's where we're going to focus. We're going to talk to some people that have been exercising their faith. And as we do that, I think you're going to learn how to exercise your faith better and grow closer to Christ. Let's get to what they have to say. Let me introduce you to my friend Randy Owen. Randy's a head and neck surgeon at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. Originally from the state of Washington, where he earned a BA in science and humanities at Seattle Pacific University, went to medical school at Columbia, and then on to the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, where he did not only his general surgery residency, but a fellowship in head and neck oncology. He's been practicing there for a number of years. He's been the past president, in fact, our first president of the New York City CMDA chapter, and is currently the area representative to the CMDA National House of Representatives. Been on many medical mission trips, Gabon, Romania, Kenya, Pakistan, the Philippines, and most recently on a housing effort down in Haiti. I wanted Randy to join us and tell us a story about sharing his faith and his practice with a patient you think would probably not be interested. Randy, I heard you had the opportunity to testify to a Jewish atheist, and God did something special. Tell us about it.
Yes, indeed. I met a patient named Iris, who gave permission to use her name and her story. About 2.5 years ago, she and her daughter walked into my office, referred to me by an oral surgeon who I'm a close colleague with, and she presented with massive tumors of the palate, of the tongue, and bilateral neck metastases.
Oh.
I was shocked at the extent of her disease, and before I was even able to do a biopsy, I could tell her that she had advanced cancer. We went ahead and did the biopsy and proved that she had squamous cell carcinoma of the palate and of the tongue, two separate tumors with bilateral neck metastases. And I told her right there, her and her daughter, you need a huge operation, major reconstruction, followed by radiation, chemotherapy, you'll need a tracheostomy, you'll need a feeding tube for a chance of controlling this disease. She said, where do I sign?
Wow.
I then, as I always do with any patient that I tell has cancer, I said, do you pray? And she gave me a unique answer to that question. She said, not anymore. And I said, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, I lost my husband to cancer 3 years ago, and I gave up on God at that point, and I haven't prayed since. And I said, well, I'm so sorry to hear that. and I didn't have time to go into that story, but I said I don't know everything that happened there. But I do want you to know that I believe in God, and I pray for all of my patients, particularly before I do surgery, particularly that have challenging cancers, and I will pray for you. And she said, okay. And I said, do you mind if I pray for you right now? And she said, that would be fine. So the three of us prayed together, and I saw just a tiny window of hope there, that that maybe there might be an opportunity to revisit this in the future.
So what happened next? How did the surgery go?
Subsequently, we operated on Iris and did a near-total palatectomy, near-total glossectomy, bilateral neck dissections, tracheostomy, gastrostomy. And our reconstructive surgery colleagues did an anterolateral thigh free flap, which went very nicely. And she did relatively well postoperatively until about a week after surgery, and she was tachycardic and hypoxic and was found to have a pulmonary embolism.
Oh, my.
So we treated her with anticoagulation. We actually put a filter in as well. And eventually, she got through her hospital stay. She went to rehab, and eventually she followed up with me. She made it through her course. She then started on a 7-week course of chemotherapy and radiation, which was very difficult. She lost a lot of weight, but with the feeding tube, she was able to maintain her nutrition. And she finally made it through. And by the end, she was very weak and debilitated, but she was disease-free. So then after that, she gradually started to regain strength and would insist on coming to see me every month. Most patients I see maybe every 3 months after an operation like that, but she said, no, I'm seeing you every month. And so I couldn't argue with her.
Yeah. And what happened then spiritually? I mean, where's the story go from there?
There were some openings. I would pray with her now and again, but not a lot of interest. She was very thankful for the surgery and the treatment that she had. She had a lot of trust in me, but didn't really express any interest in faith at that time. About a year after her surgery, you know, she'd see me every month, and so I was trying to think of things to do for her, and so I got a chest X-ray, and we found a 1-centimeter lung cancer. And I told her about it and sent her to a thoracic surgeon, a friend of mine, and he did a lobectomy, and it was cured. And in some ways, it was cured because she insisted on coming in every month and getting such close follow-up. Again, our relationship developed, and then about a year after that, she came in one day to see me, and she had an ulcer in her cheek right next to the flap. And I was concerned that this was a recurrence of cancer. And I told her that, and I biopsied it. And she just was immediately panicked and distraught. And by this time, you know, she's got my email address and my phone number. And so she's texting me and emailing me constantly over the several next days while we're waiting for the pathology result. And so I engaged with her, and I explained to her, you know, this is in God's hands. God has known what this is, how it came about from the beginning, and we have to trust him for the result. He's really the one that enabled me to help you with the surgery in the first place. She didn't quite buy it, but she understood what I was trying to say. And over the weekend, I told her I was praying for her. The next week she came in to see me, and the biopsy wasn't quite back yet, but she wanted to know, well, what if it is cancer, and what are we going to do? And I tried to steer her in the direction of trusting God, and I actually bought for her a copy of The Message, as well as the book by Tim Keller, The Reason for God.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave both of these to her. And then a couple hours later, the biopsy came back, and it was negative. It was not cancer. And in fact, what had happened was there was a tooth, a single molar, that had pushed its way into the cheek next to the flap, and it was irritating it. And so that was the cause.
So you got that taken care of, and what happened?
So I referred her to Ryan Lee, who's a Christian dentist who has a fellowship in oncology, and he shaved the tooth down and the ulcer went away. But by now, she had keyed in to the spiritual component. She read The Reason for God in 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And she emailed me back and she said, "Now I see that there was a reason for my suffering." It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then she started to read the Bible. She said, "Where do I start?" I said, "Well, you know, I didn't want to offend her. She's Jewish." I said, "Read the Psalms." So she starts reading the Psalms. And a couple days later, I get a message from her. "Who is this David?"
She wasn't very Jewish, right?
I said, "Wow, you don't even know who David is." So I said, "All right, read 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Samuel." So she read it and she says, "This is amazing, you know." Then she wanted to know, "What do I read next?" I said, "Read Job." She reads Job. She said, "This is me. I'm Job." And then she reads Judges and Esther and Genesis and Exodus. And then pretty soon she's run out of Old Testament books. So I said, "Okay, read Matthew." So she read Matthew, and I get a message back from her. "This Jesus is amazing."
So what did you do next? I mean, her interest is growing tremendously, and her hunger and God's Spirit starting to work in her heart.
Yeah, truly. You know, she would ask me questions about the Scripture, and I would try to interpret them for her. And I started to encourage her, "Maybe you should, consider going to a Bible study." She said, "Well, what's a Bible study, and how much does it cost?" And, you know, "Do you have to be a member?" and so on. No, you just go and you study the Bible and get to know the other people and talk over the Scripture and share what's going on in your life. So eventually she became interested. She got into a Bible study that I referred her to, and she loved it. And she really interacted well with all the people there. She read Matthew. She read John. She read Romans. She read Philippians, all of these great books. I told her to read Romans 5. Where suffering leads to perseverance, leads to character, leads to hope. And she said, "Yes, this is exactly right." And so then, a couple of months later, after she'd read just about the whole Bible, she emailed me and she said, "I want to be a Christian."
Wow. Did she come into your office, or what happened next?
I was amazed. And concurrently, throughout this whole year, I personally have had a very difficult year. My father passed away in April, who was really my best friend and mentor in Christ. I've had a lot of problems and issues in my family, and so that's been very difficult. And you know, I sort of thought to myself, well, I'm not really in a state right now to lead anyone to Christ. I'm too unstable. My life is not all together right now. And then, of course, I realized, you know, God is using me in my weakness. He's using me in a time when I don't have it all together,
mm-hmm.
Which was amazing because, you know, I've often asked God, you know, what am I doing here in New York City? And why am I not on the mission field in Africa, you know, where I'd be leading patients to Christ every day? And, you know, here in New York, maybe one or two other patients I've seen that have come to Christ. And here you bring this Jewish woman to Christ in the year of my greatest weakness. It's amazing, you know, it's really true that God can use us despite our weakness.
Yeah, His strength is made perfect in weakness.
So I came to grips with that and realized that this was not about me, and this was not about my expertise in winning someone to Christ. But in fact, God was doing something here, and He was blessing me through it. So my father actually had introduced me to Pastor Abraham Sandler, who works with the Christian Missionary Alliance in establishing Messianic Jewish Church in Philadelphia and New York. So he has a church here in New York, and I'd never actually met him personally, but it was a wonderful connection that my dad had made, especially since he had just died this year. So I emailed him, and I told him what was going on. He said, "Well, let's meet together." So Abe and Iris and I met on a Tuesday morning before my office hours at Mount Sinai Hospital in the cafe, and we explained the gospel to her very clearly, and she prayed to accept Christ.
Wow.
and it was amazing.
That probably doesn't happen too often in the cafe there, does it?
No, I don't think so.
That's great. God does his work wherever he wants to do it. What was her reaction? What happened in her life after that momentous decision?
Well, you sort of never know if someone's going to, you know, grab hold of it and really run with it or kind of be mediocre. She was the former. She latched on to Pastor Abe and joined his Jewish Christian congregation in Lower Manhattan, and she's gone there every Friday ever since.
Wow.
Developed an incredible bond with the people there. I was able to attend her baptism on January 10th of this year at that congregation.
Wow.
And at the same time, near where she lives in Elmhurst, Queens, she's been going to the New Life Fellowship church Bible study on Tuesdays and has developed some wonderful relationships there. And she's just really, she just learned so much, and she sends me occasional emails and texts to tell me about, you know, what latest scripture they're studying and maybe what questions she has for me. But it's been wonderful to see her grow.
What impact has this had on you? I mean, you kind of touched on that as you were thinking about helping her take this step. But, I mean, as you sit here and process it, what do you think the lessons that you've learned that are applicable to other physicians and healthcare professionals listening to this?
Well, certainly that God can use us wherever we are, and he can use us no matter whether we're in a state of strength or weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really not about having the strategy down and knowing just what to say. And I think it's really simply, in this case, just a willingness to dialogue with the patient, to be open to, you know, to break the ice. I think at the very beginning, just offering a prayer for her gave her a signal that, you know, that was part of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an open door for her to ask about, and something which, if she kept coming back to me, she would probably hear about that again.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I see in it is just that, you know, evangelism is a process. I mean, you know, this was, what, 3 or 4 years before she came to that decision, and, you know, God's Spirit was working, and it was just one step at a time, and you were just so faithful to be thinking, what's the next step? What do I need to do next? Whether it's give her a Bible that she could understand, to recommending a Bible study, and you didn't prematurely try any of those things. God just kind of gave you direction on when the right time was for the next step as she moved down that road. Has she been able to impact other lives in her family or daughter or anyone like that, or has she talked about that?
So this is another amazing part of the story, is that 40 years ago, her brother became a Christian and was excommunicated from the family.
Mm.
She visited her brother a couple of years after that, and when she came home, her mother said, "How dare you ever speak to him again?" And she never did after that. She told me about this, and I said, "Well, why don't you try to find your brother and see if he's alive and tell him what's happened?" And so she tried to look him up. He wasn't where he used to live in New Jersey. In fact, she eventually found him on the internet, and he lives in Philadelphia. Eventually, they got in touch, and she actually went down to visit him over Christmas this last year, and it was an absolutely joyous reunion.
Hmm.
And him and his wife and their whole Christian community there have completely embraced Iris, and it's just been phenomenal to see this reunion. They're the only living siblings of their family. And so to come together again like that under these circumstances and to be able to share Christ with each other is just unbelievable.
I wonder how many years he was praying for her, probably all 40 of them.
Right.
You know, and we often think, you know, God just put us in the equation and he's got all these other things going on that, you know, we may never find out or sometimes do.
You know, Iris did recently have a recurrence in her mouth of cancer. And that was very, very hard for her to deal with. And at first she, you know, was in denial and she didn't want to deal with it. She couldn't believe this was happening. She didn't want any treatment. But as the days went by and we communicated, she realized that she should engage with the system and with me and with the treatment. And we just operated on her last week because it was a solitary recurrence in the mouth, and it looks like we're able to cure it. But this has been another opportunity for her to see the community of faith come around her and support her. And I honestly have to tell you, in my years of surgery, I've never seen a patient so supported, prayed for, and loved as this.
Wow. Randy, I want to thank you for taking time out of a busy day. I know you've been operating to tell us a story. You've enthused us and challenged us and got us excited about sharing our faith through our practice. Just thank you for your faithfulness.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure. It's been great to listen to Christian Doctors Digest over the last several years and be inspired by the stories. And I'm just happy to contribute this story of what God has done.
Wow, what a journey of faith Randy shared with us with this patient. You know, as we think about that personally, you may be thinking, oh man, I don't know if I could ever do that. And a Jewish atheist, oh my goodness, she might say something I wouldn't know how to handle. You know, God wants you to exercise your faith. He wants you to have your practice be a ministry, not just in taking care of patients as Christ would in healthcare, but really raising faith flags, telling faith stories, pointing people to Christ, realizing that's a process that you can be part of. God may not give you the opportunity, as he did Randy, to lead a patient to Christ, but he is going to give you opportunities every day to share your faith. Hey, listen, we've got a whole brand new curriculum hot off the press that can help you be the witness God's designed you to be. It's called Grace Prescriptions. If you were around about 15 years ago, you know about the saline solution. Well, this is the newer, better version, expanded with a lot of new information. And you need a refresher course if you took the saline solution, or if you never took it, you need to. It will transform your practice. Now, there's two ways to go about it. We've got some conferences planned where you can go. And the great thing about that is it's some focused time to really get into this. There's one November 14th through the 15th at Cedar Mill Bible Church in Beaverton, Oregon. And both Walt Larimore and Bill Pill will be presenting at that one. Also, you can just go to the CMDA website, and you'll see there on the front page information about Grace Prescription video series. If you go to the conference, you can buy the series, come back, train your colleagues, train people in your community, have this as a wonderful outreach to other Christian physicians in your area and other healthcare professionals, including pastors. Or you can just use this for your own study. What a great opportunity to sharpen your skills. You know, we do so much about, well, we got to keep up and get our CME. We got to be better at what we're doing. And that's true. But more important to Christ than how up to date you are in healthcare is whether you've turned your practice into a ministry and whether you're doing that every day. And we have the information that'll help you learn it. And a lot of other resources as well, besides the video series, including the Faith Factor Proof of Healing and the Power of Prayer, and lots of other things that you'll find in the CMDA bookstore. Check it out. Go to cmda.org. Get a copy of the video series. There's some books that'll help you today. It's delightful to welcome Bruce Steffes back to the microphone of Christian Doctors Digest. Bruce is a general surgeon. He's been a member of CMDA since 1973. Been very involved in our ministry, not only as the CEO of PACS, the Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons, but also as a member of the CMDA's CMDE Commission. That's Continuing Medical and Dental Education for medical missionaries, and they hold a large conference each year either in Thailand or Greece for missionaries. Bruce has been very involved in missions for years, doing short-term missions all over the world. In fact, he's more out of the country these days than it seems in country with all the things he's doing with PACS. Not only is he a fellow of the American College of Surgeons, but also the West African College of Surgeons, the College of Surgery of East Central and Southern Africa, and the International College of Surgeons. And has been well recognized for his contribution in missions. The Institute of International Medicine gave them their 2008 International Medicine Award. and he recently was inducted into the Medical Mission Hall of Fame. I wanted to get him to come and tell you what's happening in PACS. It's just been exciting to see what this journey of faith has done. From its very humble beginnings as a couple missionary surgeons started talking about what's going to happen when we're gone and what kind of legacy are we leaving here in Africa. And that became the Pan-African College of Christian Surgeons to where now it is just grown and grown. Let's hear what Bruce has to share. Bruce, it's great to get you back on Christian Doctors Digest. PACS is just exploding, and the Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons, for those of you who might not know the nomenclature, give us a little history and then bring us up to date on what God's been up to. I know, you know, you're running to keep up with all the good things that are happening.
The Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons was actually the idea of Dave Thompson, who was a missionary in Gabon. He was at Bangalore Hospital, and in 94 and 96 had a conversation with the CMDE conference in Kenya with the mission hospitals that showed up at the time. And his point was is that he was having a very difficult time in recruiting anybody to come work with him at this mission hospital, but he realized that if he ever died or had to leave, once the ripples went away, there'd be very little lasting effect. And so mission hospitals have always trained people because we've always been understaffed, and there is always a need to have someone do at least those procedures which a nurse or a qualified person could do. But that is by definition limited. So in this discussion, they talked about the idea of coming up with a formal training program very similar to the kind that we had in America in surgery in 1970s. And it was very much like the story of the little red hen. Everybody thought it was a great idea, but nobody necessarily wanted to do the work. And so Dave was able to find one very heroic surgical applicant from the country of Angola who was willing to move to Gabon, learn French. He was a Portuguese speaker, and to suffer all the indignities of being a surgical resident in a program that was discovering every step along the way. There were a group of surgeons that were involved in supporting him, and because this was always nurtured by CMDA, officially it became a ministry of CMDA in the early 2000s. Since that time, it has truly exploded. We had a second program come on in 2003, and then several more in 2005 and 2006. And presently, we have 9 programs that are training in 9 different mission hospitals in Africa. We're in Egypt, we are in Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Malawi, Gabon, Cameroon, and Niger. The exciting thing about PACS is that this is a new concept. It has not been tried in this exact fashion anywhere else, and it's clearly God's project because he is the one that is responsible for all the success, and we're desperately hanging on. But it's fun to watch and see what he is doing and to see how it is growing.
You know, Bruce, what most people don't realize, one thing I realize is this, is that I get way too much credit for all the good things that happen in CMDA. And PACS is completely run by volunteers. I mean, some of our members know we have a commission structure where a group of members or an individual leading them have a passion for some ministry that CMDA may not have the financial resources or the personnel to do, and we provide the infrastructure under them, and they take the ball and run with it. And that's what's happened with PACS, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It has been totally volunteered to this point, with the exception of one 32-hour secretary who keeps everything held together. We are now facing the fact that in order to do this properly and to keep the standard of what we are producing up to the level where we need to be, we are going to have to switch to a paid administration. We have had basically people doing all the work on their own time, on off hours, and while the wheel is still turning, the hamster's about dead, and we're going to have to go to something that is Christ-honoring, as cheap as we can make it, but clearly professional in its approach. And so we had a meeting in Chicago recently and talked about this a great deal. We've been praying for a long time. We're very excited to follow what we think is going to be God's leading into this salaried administration that will allow us to go up to the next level of competency.
Yeah, and that's a good growth problem. I mean, I agree with you 100%. You only get to a certain level where somebody's got to be tending the farm every day. You've done that in many ways. I mean, this would have happened, 5-10 years ago if it hadn't been for the fact that you've given, 75%, 80%, 90% of your time to making PACs successful, and lots of international travel, speaking across the country, going to surgical meetings and promoting it, offering services in mission hospitals, helping with training, the certification. Your list of duties has just been unbelievable, and that's in large part that and God's grace and lots of prayer and dedication from others as well that's made this difference.
Well, you're very kind to say that. It's clearly God's dealing and not mine. I just kind of hang on sometimes and try to not look too stupid when I get there. It is exciting, though, what God is doing, and I've had a phenomenal team of dedicated physicians working on the commission who have made a considerable input of their time. When we look at the list of physicians that are on our commission, this is a pretty impressive group of academics, and yet they all love the Lord and are giving a huge amount of time on the side to make this all go. So while I may have been the point person, it has been the team that has actually happened. And of course, even that pales into my admiration for people I consider my heroes, the guys who are on the field day in, day out as medical missionaries, who never necessarily signed up for this additional teaching aspect, who have so many irons in the fire, but who are doing a tremendous job of teaching these residents and discipling them at the same time. And I think that's the most exciting thing about this, is it's not so much that we teach surgery, but that they are being discipled. These guys are coming out and making a tremendous difference in the mission hospitals and the places where they're going back. We're adding competencies to the country. It's making a difference within the church. That's the exciting part. We now have over 40 graduates that are still in Africa, still serving, and making a tremendous difference. Our original goal that we picked literally out of the blue sky was that we would train 100 residents by 2020. Initially, I thought that was one of the more ridiculous goals that I could have imagined, but it is clear that God has honored that, and we expect to be over 100 graduates by 2019.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Talk a little bit about, the resident training. You're really training career missionaries. I mean, the national missionaries who are intensely discipled. Talk about the certification and all those things, because as you've kind of alluded to, you bring people to the States or Europe for training. They don't go back. And here we have a group of people who know the culture, know the language, and are going to be there for a lifetime. It's a great concept.
One of the problems that we have in Africa is the brain drain, as you've mentioned. And so in many countries, the best and the brightest have already figured a way to get out of the country. And so in some countries, because of religious persecution, if you're a believer, getting an actual qualified training program is difficult. And so we are drawing from a group of people who may or may not have been the very brightest in their country, but who love the Lord and are looking for a training program. PACS is a 5-year general surgical training program. Now, general surgery in America is increasingly taking care of trauma patients, maybe breast disease, maybe abdominal disease, some limited areas. General surgery in Africa is skin and its contents. We're the orthopod, we're the ENT, we're the urologist, et cetera. So the amount of information that they need to train is much, much greater than it is here in the United States. And as you mentioned, we are sincerely working with discipling these residents as well. To make a slight correction, we're really not designing this to create missionary surgeons. We are designing this to have Christian surgeons who love the Lord, who are making a difference within their country. And so while we are actively trying to recruit people and trying to get them to answer God's call in their life and become missionary surgeons, we don't consider it a failure if what they do is to go back and make a tremendous difference in their country, taking care of patients and loving the Lord. Some of our people have ended up in university settings. Some of them have come back and trained with us. in our programs and are becoming the program directors and the assistant program directors. Some of them have been asked by the Ministry of the Health in their various countries to work there. So as long as they're making a real difference and loving the Lord, we consider that a real success. And God has honored that approach, I think.
You know what? I remember you saying one time, it stuck in my brain, that, you know, in Africa, there's one surgeon for every 250,000 to 2.5 million people in many of these countries. And most common reason that a woman is going to die is she needs a C-section, and there's a lot of surgical illnesses there. It's a huge crisis. I know it's really beginning to be recognized by some of the international organizations, WHO and others, isn't it?
That's correct. The World Health Organization just approved a statement just a couple of weeks ago that states that general surgery is a public health issue and that they need to put focus on it. Now, hopefully, now that they have put their stamp of approval on it, some money will follow that because it is an expensive proposition. However, it's been very well shown that general surgery is as effective as programs like HIV therapy, immunizations, et cetera, in terms of amount of the dailies, the disability-adjusted life year that you save, et cetera. It is as cost-effective as those things in this setting.
Yeah, and it's so critical. You know, your graduates are going everywhere, but those that do go back to mission and church hospitals, it's really having a surgeon is really what makes them financially viable as well, which I think is another important thing to remember when 40 to 75% of the hospitals or healthcare facilities in Africa are still in church and mission facilities. So. Great stuff. What one group of volunteers we failed to mention, and that is all the U.S. doctors that go over to help with this training. Why don't you talk about that?
God bless every one of them. Without them, we couldn't do this. The reality is, of course, is that we as general surgeons were also not trained in orthopedics or urology or ENT or anesthesia or pathology or radiology or all the other things that go along with this. And so when people are willing to give up their vacation time or take some extra time away from their practice and come and make a difference, it isn't the simple matter of short-term missions where you go and you take some pictures and you've helped 30 people and you come back and you show your pictures. You have made a tremendous impact on these guys. And the first and foremost, one of the things that we appreciate is the fact that you actually train the missionaries, because they're going to be responsible when the short-termer goes home. But as the missionary picks up skills and as they talk with the residents themselves, it's a dramatic difference in the lives of these people. And so many of the people that have done short-term missions in the more classic way that we think of, once they have come and seen what it is like to pour their lives into these young men and women, it really does change medical missions for them as well. One of the things that is very nice as well is that because there are residents, you don't have to get up in the middle of the night quite so often. So that actually makes it a little nicer as well.
Amen to that. Amen to that. And what some people may not know, you have two non-general surgery programs, one in orthopedics and one in pediatric surgery as well. So you're beginning to subspecialize a little bit in some further training programs for some of your graduates.
Yeah, we're excited about that. It turns out that approximately 30 to 40% of our caseload is orthopedics. Of course, OBGYN is always a big number, 20, 30%, urology, 20, 30%. So we're looking at these areas of specialization to train. Since 2005 or 2006, we've also been training in pediatric surgery. And in many of the African countries, the population mixture is such that still greater than 50% of the population is under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. So there's a tremendous need for pediatric surgery, and we're hoping to open up some new programs as programs, not as teaching sites yet, in a couple of hospitals, and then as people come along with us and are willing to volunteer to be career missionaries in teaching pediatric surgery, we'd like to open up those programs as well, and we'll have obviously a tremendous impact if you can save the life of a child. You gain a great deal of cost effectiveness and make a tremendous difference.
Bruce, what about accreditation? I know you guys have a certificate and oversight from Loma Linda, who's been involved in this for years, but what about over in Africa? I know that's been a challenge, but you guys have been really working hard at it.
Yes, we have. We've been very pleased to have a formal relationship the last several years with the College of Surgeons of East, Central, and Southern Africa, and we are continuing to work on one with the West African College of Surgeons at the present time. In Africa, things are a little bit different in that the colleges are also the body that are responsible for the, quote, board certification, unquote. And so this has been a fruitful relationship with them. We do things as American community hospital general surgical training programs that is a little bit different than what they are used to because they're more used to the classic African-British educational model where it's a degree rather than competency, et cetera. But we are working through all those things, and we're very, very pleased that our residents are doing so well with this. This, of course, gives them credibility amongst their colleagues and with their patients. In the last 2 years, we have gotten the highest scores for our residents for 2 years in a row. So it gives some validity in their eyes in what we're doing, even if they don't always understand how we do it.
You know, I bet you people out there are thinking, well, how can I get involved or how can I help or what's your needs? Share some of those things. As you look, what are the choke points in continuing to expand and develop the PACS program across Africa? And interestingly enough, I should throw this in, this is now cross-contaminating. Maybe that's not the best word, but I think there's some truth in that. That other groups are,
right?
Yeah, other groups are saying, well, hey, listen, why couldn't we do this in internal medicine? Why couldn't we do this in, you know, type of thing? And this is the movement in medical missions right now to move into postgraduate training, and PACS has been right on the forefront of that. But what is your needs?
Our biggest need is for us to stay close to what the Lord wants, okay? And that's and I'm dead serious about that. That's our highest and greatest need, and we would appreciate if people would pray for us. The next real big step is personnel. We need more surgeons. We need one or two at virtually every one of our programs, and we have several hospitals that would like to open up, but we can't because of the lack of resources, both in terms of personnel and in terms of money. Now, my personal approach is I've never honestly worried too much about the money because God has promised that he's going to provide what is necessary. But what he won't do is make people respond to his call on their heart. And so what we need most of all are surgeons that are willing to make a commitment to train residents to serve the Lord in sometimes very difficult situations to make a tremendous difference. That's our greatest need. The second area from a financial standpoint, as we are going, we're presently at 54 residents. Within 3 years, we'll be at 86 residents. Our budget, because of that, is going to at least double. Our budget in order to go to a salaried administration will be another bit of money on top of that. So we're really looking at about a 300% increase in funding over the next 3 or 4 years. That's frightening, and we wouldn't do that if we didn't have great confidence this is where God wants us to go. It still becomes extremely cost-effective. We can train a resident for much, much, much less than we can in either Europe or the United States and have a much greater impact. So the other perhaps less dramatic need from that is just what you've already mentioned, and that's short-term personnel to come alongside and help us. We cannot do this without people in all the surgical specialties and anesthesia and pathology coming alongside to help us with this.
Great point, Bruce. And I think the vast majority, if not all those people, go through World Medical Missions, one of the organizations we love to partner with, and you can work with them as well. If people want to get more information, where can they get it?
Well, our PACS site on the web is www.paacs.net, or they can email me at execdirect, it's E-X-E-C-D-I-R, at pax.net.
Bruce, thanks again for you and what the whole team is doing. And I just want to challenge everyone out there to be in prayer, see how they can get involved, and let their colleagues know that they may not be aware of this. It's a great way to get them involved in CMDA, one of CMDA's ministries that will just really change their lives and change the lives of those that they minister to. So thank you, Bruce. God bless.
Thank you so very much, Dave. Have a great day.
I hope you're as excited about what's happening through PACS as I am. Last year, I think we may have mentioned it, 175 doctors went over to help in the training. God is just up to something, and it's really going to change Africa. And it's been so exciting for CMDA to help birth this and help manage it. But it's volunteers that make it so effective. And if God's moving in your heart, I hope you'll take that call and answer it. Bruce has written some great resources that can help you or others be involved in missions. Two books, they're companion books. One's called Your Mission, Get Ready, Get Set, Go. And it's really everything anyone needs to know about going on a short-term mission trip. What a wonderful gift to give to a young person, to your own children, to a colleague that's getting involved in missions, whether it's medical or not. And then a companion volume, Medical Missions, Get Ready, Get Set, Go. It really cones down on doing medical missions overseas and what you need to know to be doing that well. And these two books are rich resources, full of wisdom. In fact, when I was writing the endorsement for the one on medical missions, I said it was a GPS that will guide you every step of the way to successful service and ministry. You'd be foolish to leave home without it. And that's really true. If you'd like to get copies of the book, all you need to do is go to cmda.org and go to our bookstore. They're available there. Or you can give us a call at our toll-free number, 888-230-2637, and one of our staff will be happy to help you. Hey, it's not too early to be thinking about the CMDA National Convention next year. It's going to be April 30th through May 3rd at the Ridgecrest Conference Center just outside of Asheville, North Carolina. Now, if you haven't been to a CMDA National Convention, you're really missing out. It's a great time for restoration and transformation. In fact, this year's theme is Transform. Transform your practice, transform your life, transform your family. We're going to be dealing with all sorts of things having to do with busy healthcare professionals' lives, and you'll be blessed to be there. Dr. Stan Key is our Bible teacher. I've known Stan for years, and he's one of my favorite Bible teachers in the whole world. We've got some great plenary speakers. Brian Arner is going to be back as our worship leader. If you were at a national convention last year, you were like I was when Brian sang his first solo. My mouth dropped. He's actually had formal training in opera, and he filled that room with God's praises. It's going to be a great spousal program, children's program. Invite a colleague to come with you and consider it an outreach activity. Bring a student or a resident. Come join us. Look forward to seeing you. Won't be long. We'll have a great time there. Hey, listen, if you've enjoyed getting this issue of Christian Doctor's Digest as an MP3 file, just let us know if you'd like to receive it that way all the time. You can just give us a call at 888-230-2637 or email us at memberservices@cmda.org. Not only is it a convenient way to get your issue even quicker, but it's also a cost savings for CMDA, money that can be put into other ministry. When I finish this next introduction, I'm going to ask you a question, so listen carefully. First of all, I want to introduce you to John Kempen. John is a professor of ophthalmology and epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He has an MD, an MPH, an MHS, and a PhD. Prior to that, he led the public health ophthalmology program at Johns Hopkins University. He's an international leader in NIH-sponsored research into ocular inflammation and infectious disease. He's been an active member of CMDA since 1988 and helped lead our student ministries on campuses at the University of California in San Diego, the University of Washington, and Johns Hopkins. He and his wife, Lori, and their three children live in Philadelphia. Now, the second person who's going to join us is Scott Lawrence. And I've known Scott since he was finishing up his Master of Divinity and Master of Theology degrees at the Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. He then was applying to be our Northeast Regional Director, and he served in that role from 1997 to 2001, did a tremendous job. I was kind of surprised one day when he called me and said, Dave, I'm going to need to resign. I'm going to medical school. I guess all these medical people rubbed off on him. But he had a passion in his heart, even back in those days, along with his wife, Tina, that they were going to be medical missionaries. He finished up his training in ophthalmology and now is the assistant professor of ophthalmology and the director of the glaucoma services at the University of North Carolina. He's in charge of residency education and is co-director of an academic glaucoma fellowship. He directs their cataract surgery training and their state-of-the-art surgical training laboratory, and his research interests are in gene therapy and nanomedicine in treating eye disease. Okay, here's the question. Why would John and Scott move with their families halfway around the world to start a hospital in Ethiopia and a training center? Stay tuned. We're going to find out. John, Scott, it's so good to have you on Christian Doctors Digest. I wanted to get you here to talk about the exciting project God's put on your heart. John, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the need in Africa for ophthalmology services, and then we'll get into what you guys are going to do about it.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks for the opportunity to talk with you. The need in Africa for ophthalmology services is the most in the world, at least if you look at it from an age-specific rate, because the age structure, of course, is the lowest in the world, and it's sort of a ticking time bomb that's going to explode to have more and more blindness. So it's a place where a great deal of attention is needed to raise the number of resources and human resources and capital available to address the problem of blindness, and I think it's widely agreed it's the most important place in the world to build ophthalmological services.
What kind of services are there, Scott? I mean, you know, I worked in Africa for years. I remember we used to have an ophthalmology team that came once every quarter to help us with cataract surgery. I mean, you guys have looked at Africa and been to some of the big medical meetings there. What kind of resources are available?
Right. Well, there are a lot of, you know, smaller hospitals that have some small-scale eye services available, and certainly, you know, working hard at treating blindness. In our area, in Ethiopia, I think one of the dominant models has been projects, so people coming in, groups getting together, whether they're treating trachoma or they're treating cataract blindness, coming in for a week or 10 days, and then coming back, you know, once a year or something like that. And the problem is that the needs are so out of proportion, you know, to what's being done, that the rates of blindness and the number of people who are really suffering are going up exponentially, you know, year by year.
There's something like one ophthalmologist per million population in a lot of sub-Saharan Africa, and there's very little opportunities for them to get subspecialty training, and so there's a lot of brain drain as a result of that among the few that are there. So really, the situation needs to be improved, both in terms of more training and more opportunities for them. There's something like 80 times as many ophthalmologists in the United States
Wow.
per capita.
Wow, and a lot more blindness there. Yeah, for those who've never seen it, and I know you guys have, but the first day after you take those patches off and somebody's can see again after their cataract surgery is just unbelievable. That experience when people, and I remember a pastor just saying, I can read my Bible again. I can read my Bible again. So it's just life transforming. Tell us about the vision. Just jump in here. And I mean, I got so excited when you guys told me about what your plans were and the vision that you had. And I think those listening will want to hear it. Tell us about it.
Well, sure. You know, I'll start and just say, you know, the Christian Medical and Dental Association has played a huge role from the beginning. And for those who don't know, I was actually working as a regional director up in the northeastern United States in the late 1990s. And it was in that context that I actually met John when he was down at Johns Hopkins in the CMDA ministry there. And so we started a friendship then. And you know, later on, when I went into medicine and came out on the other side after about what seemed like
forever,
a long journey, yeah, forever, we reconnected. And so we had sort of separate journeys and separate paths, but with one similar goal, which was to really use the gifting and opportunities that the Lord had given us for His glory, in the world in the area that had the greatest need. And so when it turned out that we ended up going into the same specialty with an overlapping skill set and a similar sense of calling to global missions, it was sort of a marriage made in heaven in that sense. And so we reconnected a few years ago through a meeting of Christian ophthalmologists, and John had been sharing what was on his heart about developing a center of excellence, which, you know, that concept of having an academic engine that provides excellence in clinical care and is training up practitioners and doing groundbreaking research, that has a long history of probably 100 years in the West. But more recently, you know, in the past 20 to 30 years, that model has actually had a big impact in other parts of the world, such as India and Nepal and China. And so what we've been praying about is developing a Christian center of excellence that could have a huge impact, not only physically in being able to treat, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of people who are in need of health care, but also providing a vibrant spiritual ministry, particularly in communities that are less reached with the gospel.
So, John, what's that going to look like? I think you guys are calling it the Discovery Eye Institute, and it's a great name. What's it going to look like when it's all up and going?
Yeah, you know, I have known about this sort of model that Scott was describing for many years, and I guess since about 2008 have begun having this vision to try to develop a center that would be self-supporting. And so it's a approach that by providing low-cost, high-volume, high-quality services, the cost of cataract surgery and of glasses and of other services, although those are the two main ones that are the lowest hanging fruit, can be made affordable to the poor. And this is done by offering some slight differences in the services offered. We are planning to provide, especially cataract surgery, with basically non-inferior methods for the poor using what's called manual and small incision cataract surgery, and perhaps an Indian-make intraocular lens that's been verified to be of comparable quality to anything in the West. But for those with extra money who want to have the kind of services they would get here in Philadelphia, they could have that too and pay more for it and thus subsidize the care of many poor people. And so based on the projections that we have, within about 3 years or so, plus or minus most likely, since nothing is completely predictable, the Institute ought to be self-funding. So it does require some capital input of maybe something like $2.5 million to get it going. But within about 3 or 4 years, we ought to be doing several thousand cataract surgeries a year and seeing about 10 times as many patients. And it should be self-supporting at some point along that way. And this has been demonstrated several times in South Asia. And so part of our challenge is translating that to Africa, where the greatest need is. It also provides a fantastic opportunity for training, because when you have a large volume of patient care going on, it's a great opportunity for training. And with Scott and I personally going there for 10 or 11 months a year for many years, along with Dr. Demisi Tedesi, who's our Ethiopian partner, there's great resources for training and mentoring people, and so we ought to be able to begin to address the lack of numbers of ophthalmologists and also improve the quality of the ophthalmologists that are there. Not to say there aren't some that have good quality and capabilities, but there need to be many more. Likewise, it provides an outstanding amount of contact with people. Everybody wants to have their vision restored or to be sharpened by glasses and so on. And so it provides a great opportunity to reach many people. And we hope to use that opportunity to talk with people about their spiritual needs. We're not looking to be abrasive in doing that, but by just asking people if they're interested and having sort of a systematic way of doing that so that opportunities are not lost, we expect we should be able to talk with many thousands of people a year at our facility. We're also looking to do a lot of outreaches, since this will be based in the main city in Ethiopia, so a lot of people will have trouble getting there. And so we'll be doing outreaches into the field to try to identify especially people that need glasses and cataract surgery. And this can provide a great opportunity for churches or missionaries to partner with us to sort of get established in the community or just do a service to their community that will be a blessing and will give honor to the name of Christ in that community. And so it can be a good basis for reaching into areas that haven't been reached, as well as building up the church.
I know we've partnered with Campus Crusade, uses a different name there in Ethiopia, but there are villages they couldn't even get into until our GHO teams came and helped. And I just can't imagine what you guys can accomplish when you're there full time and opening doors into communities to share the gospel, especially down in the more Muslim areas along the Somali border and Somali refugees. So I'm just thrilled about what God's got in store for you guys. And there's not many, listen, that would take on something like this to start essentially a hospital from scratch and a whole ministry. Talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing in training, because I know one of the plans is actually to be training ophthalmology residents and sending them out across the country. Both of you guys got academic appointments and connections here in the U.S., so how's that going to work?
One of the great appeals for us is to sort of fuse academic medicine with missions. And, you know, both of us have been involved in teaching in academic medicine. For me, it's been coming up on 16 years. And so we're really looking to put those skills to bear in development in Ethiopia and contributing to the development of the church as well, of course. So we're looking to start up an International Council of Ophthalmology accredited residency program. The ICO has provided a board exam that can be taken internationally. It doesn't technically count as a board exam, but it's for any individual country, but it's a well-recognized credential and standard to show that the resident has met a certain level of quality, and then they have to also pass standards in Ethiopia as well. But we're looking to set up what would be the first private, meaning non-government, residency training program there in Ethiopia. And in addition, we're looking to provide subspecialty training, which is almost completely unavailable in Eastern Africa, you know, starting with our subspecialties, which for Scott is glaucoma, for me is uveitis, which also overlaps into retina, both of which are tremendously needed in the area. So we will have to get going about 3 years before we can be formally recognized for a residency program according to Ethiopian rules, but we can start on the fellowship training and sort of sharpening up people who would like extra surgical experience and so on from almost the beginning.
You know, in my current academic position, I spend almost 100% of my time training residents, and I lead a fellowship as well in my specialty of glaucoma, which is the leading cause of irreversible blindness in the world. And everything from mentoring during surgery and treating, you know, teaching the steps of surgery, monitoring their clinical skills and following them in clinic, teaching cataract surgery courses. That's really what I've been doing. And one of the reasons that I took the path I did for the last few years is to really get that hands-on experience. And I find that, you know, there's so much that's in common with training junior physicians and specialists as is discipleship. It really is a discipleship of a kind. And so I think in our work, you know, we really envision, you know, making disciples in the sense of developing young men and women who would be leaders in their field, both as physicians but also as Christians and as disciple makers. And so in one of the groups that you're well acquainted with, Dave, is the Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons. And I think they've done such a tremendous job in sub-Saharan Africa at really setting a new paradigm for developing training programs. And I anticipate, I know John and I both anticipate, working closely with the PACS organization and hopefully, you know, learning from them, you know, some of the challenges and successes that they've had in the work in sub-Saharan Africa.
Now, I can hear the spouses out there and their questions they're asking in their mind now. What does your spouse think about this? John, you said you'd been in the U.S. since for 16 years after training, and I know, Scott, you've been here for a few years. And your family and your kids, this is going to be a big adventure.
You know, it is. You know, Tina and I have a lot in common. So my wife Tina and I met at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and we both were involved in the missions and international community there. And so there's a real sense for us, you know, that we've waited half our life to do this. And so we go in with, I think, a lot of excitement and with a healthy sense of reality. You know, we're no longer in our mid-20s. You know, we're in our 40s now. And so we know that there will be challenges along the way, and I think that's a real positive. My oldest of three children will be entering high school, so that'll be a major transition for us as a family and a you know, a prayer, you know, that we have for him. But, you know, Tina, you know, very much wants to be a part of the work. And I think, you know, as John and I have often talked about, here in the United States, we tend to work long hours, and we come home and reintroduce ourselves to our wives and spouses and families. And things tend to, as you know from your time in Kenya, things tend to work a little bit differently over there. And so one of our hopes is that our families, even our kids to some degree, can be involved in our work and that we can really share in that work together as a family.
Lori and I are really excited about this and the impact that it will have on our family, because to have our children be able to grow up seeing us living out the gospel in, you know, what some people would consider a radical way, although in many ways it's a very logical way, is something that really excites us. Lori's a missionary kid, and she's lived, you know, over a third of her life, I think, overseas. So she's been happy to live in Baltimore and Philadelphia while I was working at Johns Hopkins and the University of Pennsylvania. But there's a little bit of sense of, you know, at last.
Yeah, finally, finally.
So anyway, she's happy to follow the Lord wherever he leads, but she's certainly not unhappy about doing this. And Addis Ababa, I think, will be a good place for children. There are a lot of opportunities there. And Lori really found, as growing up overseas herself, that it was a fantastic experience. You know, there are certainly some challenges, but many blessings as well. And, you know, especially to really see the Lord's work going on in your family, I think will be a fantastic thing for us. And so we're praising God about that. Our family's a little bit younger than Scott's, even though we're slightly older, although we're almost the same age. And so hopefully it'll be a little bit easier. Our oldest, Christopher, will be 11 next year, and he's actually pretty keen on doing this. I'm not sure if he really fully understands it, but at least he's keen on it. And our younger children are still sort of wondering, you know, what we're talking about a little bit.
So. Yeah. Well, I tell you, we look back on our time in Kenya, the thing we thank God most for is we got to raise our kids there when they were young. And I had breakfast, lunch, and supper with my kids every day. What doctor does that in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Unless there was an emergency or something at the hospital, and you know the kids were involved. It's just fantastic, and you face common challenges together. And they say the best way to bind a family together in the U.S. is to take them camping. Well, that's what missionary life is—one long camping trip. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
You face a common challenge. So, I'm excited for you guys and the impact they have on your family. And I think the example you all are setting is actually doing this in midlife. And there's a lot of folks listening to this that thought, you know, maybe someday I would. And here you guys doing it where your kids are the age they are and where you are in your careers and how you've just thoughtfully prepared for this. It's just, I think, exciting and an example to all of us. I want to thank you for your faithfulness and thank you for taking some time out of your busy day to just share what God's done in your own heart. And I want to encourage those listening to make this a matter of prayer. If you're an ophthalmologist, there's a great place you can go help out as these guys get started. If you want to help some way financially, or maybe you just want to make them a real prayer request, but I encourage you to get involved, because as we get involved, God's going to work in and through them to make a real difference. So, hey guys, thanks for being with us, and you're going to be in our thoughts and prayers as we go forward, and I'm excited to see what God's going to do.
Yes, well, thanks very much, Dave. You know, I've been a member of CMDA since 1988 when I was a first-year medical student, and it's been a tremendous blessing all these years. And thank you also for your personal support and being on our board of reference.
Thank you, Dave. It means a lot in your support for us, and CMDA has played such a large role in my development, in my life, and my family's life. And I take some pride, although it's a humble pride, in being the first recipient of the Story Scholarship, and I'm indebted to so many. I think of the Story family and Ernie Story himself, and you know, people like you and Harold Adolph and Sam Alind, who, you know, I've stood side by side with in Global Health Outreach Ministries of CMDA. And so it's been a long partnership, and I'm so excited and thankful that that you're a part of this as well. And so we look forward, hopefully, and with excitement in the days ahead.
God bless.
And you too, Dave.
Thank you. You too, David.
If you don't know what the CMDA Story Scholarship is, it's actually provided by one of our members, and it's a $100,000 scholarship we award each year to a student going into career missions to help pay for the cost of their training. And wow, it has gone to some really great recipients. In fact, I think it's one of the hardest decisions I'm involved in every year, was our committee meets and tries to decide which one of the students is going to receive that scholarship award. And Scott has really lived out in his life already, and even further as he moves forward in the goals of that scholarship program. You know, I think the thing that amazes me about CMDA is I've been here for now 20 years this month, is the breadth of its ministry and the impact it has. It just amazes me what God has done in growing CMDA to now over 50 different outreaches around the world. And we just focused on a few of them today, from the PACS program to what's happening in the CMDE, I mentioned the Continuing Medical and Dental Education Conference, to Grace Prescription training that's gone literally around the world in the last 10 years under the Saline Solution banner, and now is even expanding more. And we could just go on and on. What great opportunities are there for you to exercise your faith in your practice, in missions overseas, in your communities? We want to equip you, motivate you, and train you to be all that God has designed you to be. I know you're too busy. I know you've got so much medicine to do. You think, how can I do something more? But I tell you, it's in ministry where you find the greatest satisfaction. It's as you witness to a patient, as you raise a faith flag, as you take time out of your practice to go overseas short-term, or even take your family long-term, that God does a new thing in your life. I know every time I lead a mission team, I think, why in the world did I agree to do this? And when I come back, I'm thinking, oh, I am so glad I did. I have been restored. I've been renewed. Or when I pick up a new resource and take the time to read it so I can be better trained to do spiritual ministry. I say all that just to say this. I want to challenge you to take it to the next level. One of the problems when I was an African missionary, when we went out somewhere, is we would be on these mud roads. You know, we had 58 inches of rain a year, and you'd drop a wheel into a rut, and it was so hard to get it out. You had to really pull on the wheel to get out of that rut and get back on firm ground. It's the same in our lives, isn't it? We just wake up one day and think, golly, I'm in a rut. I haven't had any new challenges. I've lost some of that joy of what I'm doing because I'm just stuck. And what God may be saying to you as you listen to these testimonies is you need to be exercising your faith. You need to take it to a new level. You need to go out on a limb and do something where you're depending on God more than you ever have, because that's where you will grow. That's where you will find the joy and the satisfaction in what you're doing every day. That's my prayer for you as we close this issue of Christian Doctor's Digest. And as always, if there's anything we can do to help you, just contact us, drop us an email, pick up the phone. We're here to serve you. We exist for you. We are working for you. So let us help you any way we can, through prayer, through resources, through training, through opportunities. We want to be there to help you serve the Lord. May God bless till we get a chance to get back together again.
Christian Doctor's Digest is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Christian Doctors Digest are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations.